There is this massive shift around the world to electric vehicles. Australia's uptake last year was under 2%.
Opposition Labor leader says other countries are leaving Australia behind. It's Thursday, November 11th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Amy Heibels in Washington. You'll also find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, what do UNHCR plans on Bangladeshi Island mean for Rohingya refugees? Coal in the crosshairs at Glasgow Climate Talks. An American mother reflects on son's sacrifice in Afghanistan. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Australia's electric car industry has criticized the government's new policy to build thousands of charging stations as far too little too late. The Australian government has pledged $132 million to speed up the rollout of hydrogen refueling and electric charging stations. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports for VOA.
The Electric Vehicles Council says an Australian government plan to build electric vehicle charging stations and hydrogen-powered vehicle fueling stations doesn't include subsidies, tax incentives, or minimum fuel standards, and leaves Australia lagging the rest of the world. Transport accounts for one-fifth of Australia's emissions. Prime Minister Scott Morrison says electric and hydro-powered vehicles are key in efforts to decarbonise the economy. There's a plan to build 50,000 home charging stations and increase the government's fleet of electric vehicles. Morrison says it's a bold strategy.
Our plan, which is another key part of the overall national plan to achieve net zero emissions by 2050, this is one of the key building blocks. The future fuels and the take-up of electric vehicles driven by Australians' choices.
The government has forecast that electric and hybrid electric vehicles will make up about a third of annual new car and light truck sales by 2030. Sales hit a record of 8,688 in the first half of this year, but made up a fraction, about 1.5%, of total sales. During the 2019 election campaign, Morrison derided electric cars. His stance has changed as environmental pressures grow on governments around the world. But critics say the Australian strategy lacks ambition and does nothing to improve affordability of electric cars. Morrison insists that costs will come down as technologies improve. Opposition Labor leader Anthony Albanese says other countries are leaving Australia behind.
There is this massive shift around the world to electric vehicles. Australia's uptake last year was under 2%. In Norway, it was 70%. In the United Kingdom, it was 15% and rising. We're falling way behind.
Australia has some of the world's highest emissions per person and is a huge exporter of fossil fuels. Despite a pledge to achieve net zero carbon emissions by 2050, the Morrison government said its coal and gas industries would not be phased out. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
We invite you to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook VOA Asia and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Taliban claim capturing 600 Islamic State militants. Aid group says up to 5,000 Afghans fleeing daily to Iran. India hosts talks on Afghanistan, but Pakistan, China stay away. U.S. journalist Danny Fenster detained in Myanmar facing new charges of terrorism and sedition. Kishida re-elected Japan's prime minister in parliamentary vote. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the VOAnews.com website. V VOA Asia continues. The United Nations Refugee Agency is set to begin aid operations in support of ethnic Rohingyas on a remote Bangladeshi island where more than 20,000 refugees have been relocated by the Bangladesh government. VOA Asia examines some of the issues refugees are grappling with on the island, described by some as unlivable. Rohingya refugees relocated to the Bay of Bengal island of Basan Char have complained of poor food and living conditions over the past year. The United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, or UNHCR, and the Bangladesh government have agreed to work together to support the refugees. But the arrangement has not been made public. Some Rohingya from the island say they welcome the UN agency on the island, hoping their lifestyle will improve and their kids will be able to get a good education. Others say the island will remain unlivable even after the UNHCR starts its operations there. Rohingyas who are in Basan Char now have seen how the island sinks under the sea during high tide. Heavy rain and tsunami can drown the island completely, and all Rohingyas there will get killed, said a 36-year-old Rohingya man who fled Basan Char and returned to a mainland camp a few weeks ago in Cox's Bazar. He spoke to VOA on condition of anonymity for fear of being arrested and forcibly returned. Rights groups have often called Basan Char a prison island for refugees. They have urged the UNHCR and the government to publicly release details of the agreement so that others can monitor compliance with its terms. Rights groups have long argued the island, formed naturally by Himalayan silt, is vulnerable to natural disasters and is not suitable for human settlement. Many Rohingyas compare the Basan Char facility to a prison. Bangladesh has announced it has a plan to relocate 80,000 more refugees to Basan Char over the next few months. Phil Robertson, Deputy Director of Human Rights Watch's Asia Division, believes transparency is paramount.
UNHCR and the government of Bangladesh should publicly release their agreement so that everyone, most especially the Rohingya refugees themselves, can see what has been promised about the future situation on Basan Char. Without clarity on what the two sides have agreed on, it's hard to assess what the future holds for those stuck in Basan Char, who have so far faced separation from their families, lack of adequate food and medical services, no access to livelihoods, and physical abuses and torture by Bangladesh security personnel on the island.
Robertson adds that freedom of movement needs to be part of any agreement. Our thanks to Sheikh Azizur Rahman for contributing this story. Now in Asia, the Indonesian president and the Malaysian prime minister met in Jakarta Wednesday, where they decided to reopen the border for fully vaccinated travelers and highlighted the importance of resolving the crisis in Myanmar. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. People worldwide are enduring rising energy prices and energy shortages. For VOA, Jessica Stone reports from Washington on how this reality is affecting talks in Scotland on emission targets at this year's COP26.
Global fuel shortages are hitting consumer wallets with higher gasoline prices. Meanwhile, the world's largest carbon emitter, China, is increasing coal production to provide heat this winter.
High energy prices only reinforce the urgent need to diversify sources, double down on clean energy development, and adapt promising new clean energy technologies.
But U.S. President Joe Biden's optimistic view at the United Nations climate talks in Glasgow has not been matched by significant cuts among major emitting nations. Neither China, India, nor Russia signed on to the U.S.-European Union pledge to reduce methane gas emissions by 30% by 2030.
I think a lot of people, including myself, are not very surprised.
Rena Tway of the Center for Global Sustainability at the University of Maryland says Beijing won't announce additional carbon cuts until it can meet its existing commitments. China is seeking self-sufficiency in renewables to maintain political stability, she says, noting that nearly half of its electricity production comes from coal.
Coal has come to an end energy system, but how to retire the existing large infrastructure is another challenge, because especially for a developing country like China, India, the coal fleet are much younger.
Like China, India is giving itself a longer ramp to transition away from fossil fuels, India's prime minister announced in Glasgow it is giving itself 50 years to achieve net zero emissions. The deadline is decades after that of many other countries. New Delhi argues it still has millions to lift out of poverty and has not polluted the planet for as long as the U.S. and Europe.
In the historical context, India is not a significant contributor. So its cumulative emissions stands at 3%.
Nilima Jain is an expert at India's energy sector at the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
It has been very vocal about not phasing out coal, and rightly so. Coal fuels two-thirds of India's power generation.
While developing nations remain wedded to coal, the pressure to develop reliable, affordable sources of renewable energy for all nations is only likely to increase going forward. Jessica Stone for VOA News, Washington.
Making headlines in Asia, China says Australia is solely responsible for the sour relations between the two nations. The statements from Beijing come after former Australian Prime Minister Paul Keating criticized Australia's diplomatic relations with China. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia. Veterans Day, which initially marked the armistice that ended World War I in 1918, is a federal holiday observed every November 11th, honoring U.S. military veterans for their service to the nation. This Veterans Day marks the first since the end of the war in Afghanistan, a conflict in which more than 750,000 U.S. forces served and more than 2,400 never returned home. VOA's Kane Farabaugh spoke with one mother who reflects on America's longest war and her son's sacrifice.
Denise Williams is a regular visitor to the Middle East Conflict's Memorial Wall along the banks of the Illinois River near Marseilles, Illinois.
This memorial represents those who have died since 1967 in all Middle East conflicts. People forget we lost three soldiers in the Yom Kippur War in 1967, the infamous Black Hawk Down. Mogadishu, they're here. USS Cole, they're here. So it's not just post 9/11 here. It's all Middle East conflicts.
But there is one name on these walls closest to Williams' heart, her sons, Andrew Meary.
This is not a legacy and a reminder of death to me. This is a reminder to the living that everything you have was purchased with these names, with these lives. It is something to remember, is something to honor, to appreciate.
Private First Class Andrew Meary was deployed with the Army's 101st Airborne Division in southern Afghanistan during the U.S. troop surge in 2010, when a suicide bomber on a motorcycle detonated a device near his outpost. Andrew Meary was just 21 years old when he was laid to rest on Veterans Day, November 11th, 2010, near his home in Illinois. His is now one of more than 2,400 names on these panels who died serving in the U.S. military in Afghanistan since 2001. Meary visited his mother on leave just weeks before he died. Williams says even then, he never wavered in his understanding of the mission to eliminate terrorist threats in the country.
He absolutely believed if we were not fighting them there, we would be fighting them here. He believed in what he was doing. He believed in the righteousness of it.
Williams views that objective in Afghanistan as a success. Osama bin Laden was captured and killed less than a year after her son's death. Today, Williams represents Illinois Gold Star Mothers as the nonprofit service organization's president.
We are the mothers of those who have lost their child or children because of their decision to put on this nation's uniform.
As the United States marks the first November 11th Veterans Day after the end of the war in Afghanistan, a date which also marks exactly 11 years since she buried her son, Williams answers a difficult question she is often asked.
I get asked, well, was it worth it? There is no such thing as their child's death being worth it to a mother's heart, period. But my son didn't fight for the Afghan people. He did not fight for a political party. He did not fight for anything other than the Constitution, the oath that he swore. He fought for the American people, for America. America's worth fighting for.
Kane Farabaugh, VOA News, Marseilles, Illinois.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Be sure to like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can find us on Instagram and YouTube and at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Keith Lane, Chris Cascale, Jessica Stone, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Amy Heibels in Washington. Now go and make it a great day.